Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. The producer, as always, is Bette Marston. Our guest for this podcast is Christina Carl, the ESPN editor and writer, also a member of the GLAAD Board of Directors. You've read Christina's work for many, many years when it comes to baseball writing. She is one of the founders of Baseball Prospectus and is certainly an advocate. Maybe you use the word activist for trans athletes. That should be a really, really interesting conversation. I'm really glad that she's part of the podcast. Joe Buck is the other guest. He will have his own episode as well. Really don't need to introduce him. He's the lead voice of Fox's NFL baseball and now U.S. Open golf coverage. Okay, Bette Marston likes quick intros. So without further ado, let's bring on Christina Carl. Okay, as promised, we now bring in the ESPN MLB writer, editor, as well as a member of the National Board of GLAAD. Christina Carl is the guest. Christina, thank you very much for being on the SI Media Podcast.
Well, I'm flattered to be here and always looking forward to a conversation with you, Rich.
All right. So, you know, let's start with this because this is interesting to me. You, I think, would identify yourself as an activist, but you're a journalist as well. And there's a school in journalism that would argue one can't be an activist and a journalist at the same time because you need to be dispassionate or at the very least separated from the subject at hand that you cover. Yet for you, activism and journalism intersect. So I wonder if I think it's interesting. Can you let the listeners know sort of how you approach that intersection or duality between being a journalist but also being an activist?
Well, I would, you know, like I'd probably make the distinction, you know, like, and it's maybe a minor one, but in this case I'd say it's significant, between activism and advocacy, and where activism can be about publicly speaking out a lot, and advocacy is more about kind of behind closed doors trying to fix social issues, because I just think of that as an element of responsible citizenship. And pretty much no human institution, and certainly no institution in this country, was ever created anticipating the existence of trans people. So, you know, like, I don't think of trans issues, the stuff that I work in on that front, as really political issues, because it shouldn't be about one party or another party's, like, stand on these issues. These are things that every social institution in this country has to kind of resolve, both to benefit, you know, our fellow citizens and benefit, you know, pretty much everything that we're supposed to get as a matter of our birthright as Americans. We just need to make sure that that's extended to everybody equally. And so, like, when I'm working on stuff like making sure that police departments, you know, treat trans people with appropriate respect, and whether that comes to incarceration, arrests, searches, you know, teaching them about what you're supposed to do with a trans person, how you're not supposed to treat them any differently, how you're supposed to respect their civil rights, how you're supposed to respect their safety. You know, that's something that every citizen should be able to expect from police. And of course, that's a huge hot button issue in today's society because police departments are delivering pretty mixed results on that subject. But, you know, that's where I want to do that because that's what I think we need to get to as a better place on policing. Similarly, you know, like working on stuff like with trans kids for the benefit of trans kids and trans athletes, a trans kid who wants to play sports is just a kid. And so that's the distinction. People need to stop making that distinction. A kid just wants to have a childhood the same as any other kid. And so why wouldn't you want them playing Little League baseball or youth soccer or any other event that, you know, like kids just want to do because that's what kids do. And so I hate to see people have to win their childhood at the business end of a lawsuit. So why not, instead of that, work to correct policies and get people to the place where they need to be, as far as saying, like, kid just wants to be a kid, wants to play. So whether that's working with, you know, working on the state level, getting state high school associations to adopt the rules that are inclusive. So, you know, we have 16, 17 states in the right place. We have 16, 17 states that are kind of in a complicated place. And we have, there are others who just either have no policy whatsoever or, you know, have outright bad policies. That's where, you know, that's a fixable problem. It's something that we can work on over the next, like, decade or so and get to the right place so that kids just get to play sports. But, you know, that's something where, again, I don't really think of that as political. I think of that as just good public policy and letting people enjoy the benefits of our society.
That's interesting. And we'll get to ESPN's role here because, as you will discuss, you're going to be part of a trans athlete panel in Bristol. That's very, very interesting in terms of educating the newsroom. But ahead of time, did you have to discuss with your ESPN bosses that these are things that you want to do away from sports, and if some might determine they are political, you see them as something larger than political? I wonder if you've ever had to have a discussion, just even with the baseball people, that there's this whole other part of what you do away from journalism.
Well, they all know that I work on this stuff, but again, because I really don't spend a lot of time writing about it publicly, and I'm not. That's where, again, I would make the distinction between advocacy and activism.
Right.
In activism, you might complain about a problem. In advocacy, I'd rather look for solutions. And maybe that fits well with sports, because sports is supposed to be results-oriented. But, you know, that's where, you know, like, I met with Major League Baseball in January just to, like, say, like, hey, you know what, have you guys thought about ever backing, like, you know, a general idea that make sure that Little League nationally, like, is cool with trans kids? And so, like, you know, starting that kind of conversation is cool, and, you know, I'm hopeful that Major League Baseball will get to the right place, but I don't really think of that as a political thing or really that controversial an issue. But, you know, similarly, we had, you know, like, in working with the National Center on Lesbian Rights and the NHL, not a natural combination you would anticipate, but they were helped us work with, you know, like, on the benefit of, you know, trans kids who wanted to play hockey in Canada. And the fact that the NHL stood up for, you know, trans kids and trans athletes, and, like, got working with, you know, Hockey Canada and getting everybody on the same page as far as saying, like, look, we just want kids who want to play hockey. What's the big deal? So the fact that you can have, like, sports organizations who get it and are willing to back that and are willing to support those kinds of initiatives, you know, I think, again, I'm very fortunate that ESPN gets it and wants to support those initiatives, because it's about letting people play sports.
On what level is the Caitlyn Jenner story a sports story, and what opportunity does that present for places like ESPN, Sports Illustrated, SB Nation, major outlets?
I think, you know, maybe it's, again, the first thing I thought of when, you know, like, the Jenner news truly broke, you know, like, there had been months of discussions ahead of time of, like, if she comes out or is she or any of that, you know, like, but from my perspective, looking at it as a, you know, from a sports history angle, the idea that, you know, one of the, you know, three or four or five most famous athletes on the planet in the mid-70s, I mean, you know, you talk about Jenner, you talk about Muhammad Ali. I mean, you know, it's a pretty short list.
Yeah, Pele, it's not some
instant recognition. But the fact that one of those athletes, you know, on that short list would also happen to be trans at the same time, and again, for me, looking at it from the LGBT sports perspective, at the same time that, in, you know, like, the fall of 76 is when Glenn Burke makes his Major League debut. Dave Copay is out of the closet and is writing his autobiography as the first pro football player to come out of the closet. That's at the time that Renee Richards is, you know, like, out and suing to fight or play in the U.S. Open. And so, as the first, like, noteworthy, the first out trans athlete, subsequently we found out that Olympian Stella Walsh was also trans, but, you know, that's where it's this, the 70s is this fascinating moment in LGBT sports history, and to then have Jenner, you know, in the middle of all of that, and, like, you know, wrestling with her sense of self, all of that, it just, I think of it as, you know, this is a fascinating moment. It's a fascinating moment to now be in this place. Here we are, you know, 40 years later, and she feels finally able to come out and, you know, like, talk about this stuff. I just think of it as, you know, like, again, in the same way that sports is about, like, individual excellence and an ability to, you know, like, kind of compete and make yourself the best person you can be within a field of competition, the idea that also getting into the subject of, you know, somebody's sense of their sense of individuality and identity, I just think of it as a fascinating combination, and that's where, for me, it has to be a sports story, because generally, again, if we were talking about, you know, I think it's interesting because with Jenner, we're talking about, like, other subsequent acquired fame. But, you know, that's where, if we were talking about Muhammad Ali, or if we were talking about, you know, I don't know, Joe Morgan or anybody like that coming out of the closet, or anybody who was a great athlete in the 70s coming out, you know, would we be talking about this in any other way? And for me, I think no. I mean, I don't, you know, like, I'm not a consumer of reality television, so for me, I'm kind of indifferent about that aspect of the present. I'm really just about, like, this is a sports figure. This is one of the biggest sports figures in that period of time, and so to have that as an element of the conversation, for me, is huge.
You know, Caitlyn Jenner's story is interesting in that, on a media perspective, in that we have seen the story cross over from politics or political to sports, to entertainment, obviously, with the Kardashian angle. Over the last couple of weeks, it's a story that's reached and resonated domestically in, you know, very different forums, and obviously globally and internationally in different forums. Taking the sports press, and I'm not one who likes to put all the sports press together in one sort of, you know, open quote, close quote media, because Sports Illustrated is a different outlet than the New Yorker. The New Yorker is a different outlet than Yahoo. Yahoo's a different outlet than the Grand Forks Herald. But in general, from what you've seen, how do you think the sports media has covered the Caitlyn Jenner story? And if you need to go to the sort of ESPYs debate, you can, but that sort of seemed more noise to me than anything else. There's been a lot of places that I think have offered interesting coverage, and then maybe some other places that use that story to maybe politicize or push their own agenda within the sports prism. How have you seen the coverage so far?
Well, I think overall this coverage has been really actually very good and very positive. And, you know, like, that's where I can kind of not just wear my GLAD hat, or I'm sorry, my ESPN hat, but also my GLAD hat, because I think there was a lot of groundwork, a lot of preparation, a lot of understanding. I think, if anything, the fact that, you know, this is, because everything about this scenario was unusual, the idea that the amount of work, the groundwork that was done initially by Diane Sawyer and the ABC special, and, like, you know, the team and the content that they delivered there for a mainstream audience, which I think is the other key, is that, you know, like, it's not like this was a special for Logo or something like
right.
that. This was designed really very well to explain a complicated issue to a mainstream audience, and I think it did that extremely well. To then subsequently have the Vanity Fair cover or the ESPYs News or all of that stuff come out, you know, in a sense, the fact, normally, certainly most trans people don't have the benefit of being able to slow walk this stuff through, you know, public consumption, but that's, you know, like, it's a double edge there where, you know, like, on the one hand, you know, like, Jenner has the unique opportunity to, you know, slow walk this and explain it to a mainstream audience slowly so that the response kind of can grow organically and involve, like, a level of education that, self-education or people, like, using stuff like GLAD, the media resource guides on trans topics, or talking to people like me. I mean, for years I've been getting cold called by sports journalists, like, saying, like, I'm doing a trans story and I don't know where to start. Can you help me? And it's like, yeah, no, what start? Because you're going to ask potentially stupid questions. That's okay. Ask them of me first, so that it doesn't show up on the page, so that you don't end up being, you know, Piers Morgan, so that you don't end up being, you know, somebody who you don't want to become part of the story. You want to do a great story. Let me help you do that. And this is totally unfamiliar, and you're a journalist, so you want to be able to do that story well. Let me help you do that by just, let's have a conversation about this stuff and go from there. And that approach, I think, you know, like, I think the media has done extraordinarily well. I mean, I know there's been some pushback, and there's going to be some pushback. We're in a dynamic society. But overall, the fact that the response has been what it has been, and within sports, I think it's tremendous.
I would agree with you on your thought as well. I thought for a mainstream audience, I thought that was really, really handled exceptionally well. In terms of, you know, you talk about education, and in, I don't know if it's this week or next week, you can let us know, but ESPN is going to host a group of trans athletes in Bristol as part of an opportunity to teach the newsroom how to do trans athlete stories right. You will be a moderator on that panel or set of panels. You're obviously one of the people who brought the panel to Bristol and ESPN's offices. To me, that's very, very smart thinking by ESPN, not just progressive, but just sort of smart and the right thing to do. journalistically. What from your end, who was behind that at ESPN, and can you give us a sense of just what that series of panels or what that those seminars are going to be like?
Well, I think, you know, like it grew organically out of, you know, like a recognition of what had, you know, gone off really badly in the SAN Vanderbilt story at Grantland a year and a half ago. And that was something where one of the responses to that was, like, you know, take a hard look at ourselves and talk about, like, what we could do better collectively. And that meant, you know, like, working with people like Sarah Johnson and the others in the ESPN Employee Resource Group for LGBT people. You know, like, we got to talk with the brass about, like, let's do something like this. This will be an opportunity to bring, you know, like, a to do this kind of education, but also have the athletes speaking frankly and off the record about, here's what you didn't do well, or here's where I was on this story that you guys did, and you didn't execute, like, what I think was, you know, you didn't communicate what I thought was important about my story, or I didn't, you know, and to have that kind of back and forth, I think is going to be important to be able to foster that kind of conversation. And I think it's important, you know, like the spread that we have on that panel, you know, where we have everyone from a trans coach like Stephen Alexander, who is like a Hall of Fame softball player and, you know, like a great athlete as a softball player, and then who subsequently came out as a trans man and who is a coach and a well-respected, awesome coach in New England who is, like, you know, doing great things. So the idea that, you know, helping explain that, you know, if a school is cool with this, if parents are used to the idea, then, you know, the idea that trans people can be role models and educators and teachers and who can, you know, inculcate the virtues of sports as well as anybody else. That's one of the things I'm really looking forward to having Stephen talk about. To have Chris Mosier, who just made, you know, like the U.S. Olympic squad, is huge. You know, to have him there to talk about, like, competing in individual sports is going to be awesome. To have a basketball player, like, unfortunately, Kai Allen's couldn't make it, but we still have Gabby Ludwig, you know, on the panel, and she's now moved on into coaching. But, you know, again, she was somebody who can talk about the benefits of, you know, like the acceptance within a team, acceptance within, you know, from coaches, this kind of support she got, you know, both inside the sport and out, and even the kind of respect she was given by opponents. Again, these are the kinds of things that people might wonder about, don't know about, but this is why their stories are important to talk about. Like, you know, sports gives me this coverage of my playing sports failed here. I think this is a great opportunity for our newsroom. And frankly, again, I think I'm very grateful that you've spoken highly of it, but I think the thing that, you know, my frustration isn't with ESPN, it's that this is the kind of panel or the kind of educational effort I think we should see in, you know, not just sports newsrooms, but, you know, newsrooms across the country. This is a fixable, coverage of trans people is a fixable problem. There aren't a lot of trans people in the newsroom, so this is really an opportunity to, you know, like, demystify the whole subject and get people used to, here's how you can cover these stories and cover them well. And once you do that, you won't have to learn this lesson again. I think the one dynamic within this panel that I think is important to also get into is that as much as these athletes have their stories of coming out and being coming out as athletes, but for the most part they've all come out as adults and had to transition and then play their sports, one of the things, the nature and the dynamic of these stories is going to entirely change because you have trans kids coming out at like 8 or 9 years old and playing sports, and who will subsequently, you know, by the time they reach college or might become national news stories, you know, like, they won't, you know, like, their story and their the dynamic of their, of what they've experienced in playing sports and being an athlete is going to be entirely different. And so as much as we might learn something from the current examples that are out there, people like Kai or Chris or Fallon Fox or any of these people, you know, their examples, great, learn those, learn how to do those stories well. But it's going to be a totally different challenge when you're talking about trans kids who come up and then, you know, like, won't be a news story for 10 or 15 years. Jazz Jennings, I think, is at the front edge of a wave of, you know, trans athletes who, you know, it's part of the landscape. If you're going to cover sports, you should be ready to cover this part of it as well and do it well. And that's where this panel is a great start. I just would hope that other organizations will be as ready to do something similar.
Who's expected to be in the audience? Is it open to everybody in the newsroom?
It's open. We're expecting a lot of brass, and we're expecting a lot of participation, you know, throughout the company. We also had a really good discussion panel with senior brass on LGBT issues in general, a kind of broader panel last week with Glad's participation. So, and that was, again, I think a really productive conversation. That was a smaller group. This is going to be much larger. This is going to have several hundred people in the room, and is going to be, you know, again, like I said, I think what I welcome most about it is that because it isn't a filmed event or something like that, that it's a closed, it's a closed room where
right.
we're going to be able to really get into it.
Gotcha. Okay. So now it's closed it's close to the outside world or open press and for employees only.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. Okay. That's interesting. All right. And then, all right, last one for me. You have a long history of writing about baseball. Are you one of the founders of Baseball Prospectus or just one of the first writers for Baseball Prospectus?
No, I'm one of the founding five.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Going all the way back to 95, 96.
Right, Fab Five for Baseball Prospectus. So this is interesting to me because you, I think you can really, and we talked about this before you came on, that I think you can really offer something interesting. You told me that you started reporting inside ballparks in 2007, and prior to that, most of your baseball writing was not on site. So, you know, you have a, you know, there's such an interest, it's an interesting time in baseball writing and reporting in that analytics and sabermetrics have become their own industry, and people just enjoy reading that kind of content and might not necessarily honestly be interested in player quotes and things that happen at the ballpark. You've sort of straddled both these worlds. So in your opinion, is the baseball reader served by both those who cover the game as they have been for many years, by the sabermetric crowd? Should reporters sort of do a combination of both? And I'm not trying to pit one versus the other, but as someone who's been in baseball and written about baseball for a long time, what's the best percentage or what's the best medium in terms of being a journalist covering the sport, in your opinion?
Oh, I think, you know, like, I think this goes back to my thoughts from, you know, like, what kind of created Baseball Prospectus in the first place, is that you can raise the bar, and the audience wants good content. So you can integrate, you know, good sabermetric content into that. But that's where, you know, in the same way that you have old-school journalists who have learned about sabermetrics and are utilizing it within their coverage, which is awesome, you know, they're addressing a mainstream audience with stuff that they may not be familiar with some of the concepts or some of the metrics, but that's okay, because at least, you know, like the way I try to explain it to some of the old hands, you know, like on the beat, is just sort of like, it's a way to engage your audience and get them asking questions and expanding the conversation. It's a way to have fun with thinking about the game. The way in which I think how it informs me as a reporter is that I think it leads to sharper, smarter questions. I mean, if you look at pitch FX data, if you look at performance metrics, if you take that into an interview with a player, you know, and sit there and say, like, hey, you're doing this with your cutter, or you're doing this with your changeup, or it looks like you're trying to do something differently, but what are you thinking? And, you know, then be able to talk to the pitching coach about that as well, and, you know, the manager and kind of their perspective. I think, you know, like, one, it inculcates better respect from people inside the game. But if, you know, like, you're showing that you're doing your homework and applying yourself and using this stuff to inform your reporting and coverage, because then you're talking their language. You're going in with the kind of information about how these guys make their living and do the job, and you're asking them, as opposed to, well, you had a bad day, you had a bad game. Tell me about your bad game. You know, you don't want to be the one asking the clown question, but you do want to be the one who's asking people about, like, how do you do your job and how do you do it even better? And what are you trying to do? I mean, it's one thing to, like, use, like, a shorthand expression, like, you know, the game of adjustments, but then it's like, well, let's talk about, like, you know, the nitty-gritty of what that actually involves as far as, like, what you're trying to execute on the field, what you're trying to do at the plate. I think, one of the great benefits of sabermetrics, applied sabermetrics in this way, is that you end up, you know, like if you're going, you go into the locker room and you just have a great baseball conversation with people who know an awful lot about baseball, and that happens to be baseball players and managers. And so, like, that information, you know, like, I think that's the kind of stuff that, that, you know, a good reporter, you know, can get. If you gain a little bit of facility with it, it goes a long way, and it helps you talk to players about the stuff that they do in a new way that gives, creates better content. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're getting to talk about baseball with baseball people. It's pretty cool.
Who's the one player that you haven't interviewed yet that you really want to interview?
Oh, God, I think Joey Votto, but he's supposed to be infamously hard to get on talk concretely on the subject of hitting, because he sounds like a really smart guy, really sharp. And, you know, like, I don't know if I would get as much out of him as I did out of, say, Paul Goldschmidt or Paul Konerko, or, you know, like, I mean, some guys just will get into the subject and love talking about hitting. Matt Kemp, I think, is a lot of fun to talk about hitting with. But you know, that's, I don't, Votto is reportedly really guarded, so I don't know if it's almost kind of like I'd put Votto in that category, like Greg Maddux, as far as like somebody who you, there is so much you know you could learn if he would open up and talk to you, but he doesn't necessarily have an incentive to do that.
All right, so Votto is the one. That's your goal as we head forward. Christina Carl, you can find Christina's work on ESPN.com. She is a baseball writer there, an editor as well. And if you're listening to this podcast, you know that already. You could follow Christina on Twitter. It's her name, first and last. And she's a member of the National Board of GLAAD. She's one of the people when I started this podcast who I wanted to get as sort of my first like 25 people. So I'm really glad that she agreed to do the podcast. Christina, we really appreciate your time. Best of luck heading forward. Best of luck with that panel, and we'll all continue to read your baseball stuff. Thanks so much for being on the SI Media Podcast.
Well, hugely gratifying to be invited, and always happy to talk.
Our thanks to Christina Carl for the conversation. Really interesting, and that ESPN panel coming up. Like I said during our conversation, full marks to ESPN for hosting that in Bristol. That's really, really just very smart of them to do, to educate the newsroom on how to handle trans athlete stories. So I give them a lot of credit. I think that's cool. I'd love to see SI do that in the future as well. And Christina will be a fantastic moderator as well as resource, obviously, for all those in that newsroom. My producer is Bette Marston. As always, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you next time on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.